Let me tell you about the time. But Avijah shrugged her away and went off by himself to sit with his back to the station wall opposite the reactor car. Hawser looked down the platform to where the old man sat. He'd better watch his radiation meter, he said to Yalson. It's pretty hot down there near the reactor car. Yalson gnawed at another ration bar. Let the old bastard fry, she said. Zugzal woke up. Yalson watched him regain consciousness, then waved the gun at him. Tell the big creep to head on down the ramp, will you, Hawser? She said. Zugzal looked down at Hawser and struggled awkwardly to his feet.
Don't bother, he said in Moraine. I can bark as well as you in this miserable excuse for a language.
He turned to Yalson.
After you, my man.
I am a female, Yalson growled, and waved the gun down the ramp. Now get your trefoil ass down there. Hawser's suit AG was finished. Unahar Klosp couldn't have taken Zoxal's weight anyway, so they would have to walk. Avijah could float, so could Wubslin and Yalson, but Balveda and Hawser would have to take turns riding on the pallet, and Zoxal would need to footslog the whole 27 kilometers to Station 7. They left the two human bodies near the doors to the transit tubes, where they could collect them later. Hawser threw the useless lump of the mine's remote drone to the station floor, then blasted it with his laser.
Did that make you feel better? Avijah said.
Hawser looked at the old man floating in his suit, ready to head up the tunnel with the rest of them. Tell you what, Avijah, if you want to do something useful, why don't you float up to that access ramp and put a few shots through the head of Zoxal's comrade up there, just to make sure he's properly dead?
Yes, Captain, Avijah said, and gave a mock salute.
He moved through the air to the ramp where the Adiran's body lay.
Okay, Hawser said to the rest. Let's go.
They entered the foot tunnel as Avijah landed on the middle level of the access ramp. Avijah looked down at the Adiran. The armored suit was covered with burn marks and holes. The creature had one arm and one leg missing. There was blood, dried black, all over the place. The Adiran's head was charred on one side, and where he had kicked it earlier, Avijah could see the cracked keratin just below the left eye socket. The eye, dead, jammed open, stared at him. It looked loose in its bone hemisphere, and some sort of pus had oozed out of it. Avijah pointed his gun at the head, setting the weapon to single shot. The first pulse blew the injured eye off. The second punched a hole in the creature's face under what might have been its nose. A jet of green liquid splashed out of the hole and landed on Avijah's suit chest. He splashed some water from his flask of the mess and let it dribble off.
Filth, he muttered to himself, shouldering his gun. All of it. Filth.
Look. They were less than 50 meters into the tunnel. Avijah had just entered it and started floating toward them when Wubslin shouted. They stopped, looking into the screen of the mass sensor. Almost at the center of the close-packed green lines, there was a grey smudge. The reactor trace they were used to seeing, the sensor being fooled by the nuclear pile in the train behind them. Right at the very edge of the screen, straight ahead, and over 26 kilometers away, there was another echo. It was no grey patch, no false trace. It was a harsh, bright pinpoint of light, like a star on the screen.
Chapter 12. The Command System. Engines.
A sky like chipped ice, a wind to cut you to the bloody core, too cold for snow for most of the journey. But once for 11 days and nights it came, a blizzard over the field of ice we walked on, howling like an animal with a bite like steel. The crystals of ice flowed like a single torrent over the hard and frozen land. You could not look into it or breathe, even trying to stand was near impossible. We made a hole, shallow and cold, and lay in it until the skies cleared. We were the walking wounded, straggled band. Some we lost when their blood froze in them. One just disappeared, at night in a storm of snow. Some died from their wounds. One by one, we lost them, our comrades and our servants. Everyone begged us make use what we could of their corpse once they were gone. We had so little food. We all knew what it meant. We were all prepared. Name a sacrifice more total or more noble. In that air, when you cried, the tears froze on your face with a cracking sound like a heart breaking. Mountains. The high passes we climbed to, famished in that thin and bitter air. The snow was white powder, dry as dust. To breathe it was to freeze from inside. flurries from the jagged slopes dislodged by feet in front, stung in the throat like acid spray. I saw rainbows in the crystal veils of ice and snow, which were the product of our passing, and grew to hate those colours, that freezing dryness, the starved high air and dark blue skies. 3 glaciers we traversed, losing 2 of our comrades in crevasses, beyond sight or sound, falling further than an echo's reach. Deep in a mountain ring we came to a marsh. It lay in that scoop like a cess for hope. We were too slow, too stupefied to save our quirl when he walked out into it and floundered there. We thought it could not be, with air so cold around us, even in that wan sunlight. We thought it must be frozen, and we saw what only seemed to be, and our eyes would clear, and he would come walking back to us, not slip beneath that dark ooze out of reach. It was an oil marsh, we realized too late, after the tarry depths had claimed their toll from us. The next day, while we were still looking for a way across, the chill came harder still, and even that sludge locked itself to stillness, and we walked quickly to the other side.